5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So since May, Europeans have had the right to request that Google remove online search results that potentially embarrass them. This followed a ruling by the European Court of Justice, and it's referred to as the right to be forgotten. So in the UK alone, there were 20,000 residents who've asked for the removal of 60,000 links. Now, I should point out, I don't think it removes the actual link itself, just it turning up in certain searches if you're looking for it online. BBC doesn't like this. In fact, it's got other ideas. It announced this week it's going to publish a constantly updated list of articles that have been removed from Google search as a result of right to be forgotten requests, which rather undercuts it, I would have thought. Joining me then to discuss this is Claire Porter, editor-at-large of techly.com.au. Claire, is there anything you want forgotten?
Oh, many things. God, if I could get my Encyclopedia Dramatica page removed from Google search results, that would probably go a long way towards getting me work in the future.
All right, I'll just write that down. Okay, I hadn't thought about that. I did get this right, though, isn't it? It's not about the link being removed. It's just about it turning up in certain searches.
No, the link itself should still exist. Google doesn't have that kind of power to be able to make internet pages no longer exist anymore, thank goodness. But it does try and remove anything that points to that particular content.
Right, and then you can find it by other means that are not necessarily blocked by whatever application you've made. So,
yeah, a quick keyword search on the BBC website should take you to
that. Yeah, well, clearly it does. So why is the BBC doing this?
Well, I think it's trying to strike a balance between press freedom and privacy. I suppose whenever a media outlet publishes the name of someone in relation to a particular offence or allegation, it's because that particular story has already passed the legality test, the threshold between is this factual and will this get me sued?
Yep.
And if the editors of that particular website have already determined that there is a public interest in the naming of particular people in relation to a particular story, or, as I said, reporting of allegations or criminal charges, for example, there is certainly a public interest in doing that. I suppose Google, therefore, has to balance that with the ability of and rights of people to be forgotten. But that, I guess that doesn't mean that necessarily the subject of those articles nor Google should have the final say about whether or not they have that right.
How does this work anyway? So there's something I want everyone to forget. How do I make that happen?
Know someone in the internet community that's very, very good at scraping your name from particular web crawlers, websites, search engines. It can be done. Yeah. Friends of mine who have had the fortune of reporting on particular experts that specialize in hiding people from the web have, at the end of that process, found their names mysteriously disappearing. I don't know if that's because, you know, the person that they were interviewing liked the subject and decided to do them a favor, but it is possible, just not plausible and not easy to do with your own two hands in a search engine.
Yeah, right. I see. There was a case in Japan last week, I think it was, the Tokyo District Court, and they ordered Google to delete the search results that linked someone to, or that particular man to a crime where later it was determined he didn't commit it. So in those sort of circumstances, now these are articles that would have published or would have passed the legal test as they were being published, but they now nonetheless create misinformation that can go global. Do you think there's a fair argument for that right for something like that to be forgotten?
It's an interesting question that you pose because on the one hand, yes, that person absolutely has the right to be forgotten, particularly if they were wrongly accused. On the other hand, don't you think that particular press publication has an obligation not only to publicise their own misreporting of the facts, but to republish the article with corrections highlighting that it was their error or an error of investigation, you know, depending on what the case may be. Mm. And in that case, it might be that really those articles deserve more exposure, not less, however embarrassing that might have been for the person. If they want the record corrected, then they need the record to exist in the first place.
I suppose, but if the record doesn't exist in the first place, then there's no need for the correction. I mean, that's the flip side of the
way. And there's no need for embarrassment then for publications to have to go back and add an addendum or an apology to misreported stories. Yeah. It just seems kind of convenient. I mean, if something is true at the time and then turns out not to be true later, wouldn't you rather have a record of that process rather than not having a record of it at all?
Yeah, well, it does raise interesting questions for research, for example. Say you're researching something on reporting of crime or, I don't know, whatever it might be. That could actually be a really important document.
Yeah, exactly. Particularly if, you know, if you're going back and looking at like the chronology or history of investigation in, as it relates to particular crimes in Australia. I mean, imagine not having the information that led to the Malat murders, for example, or not having the information that led to the NSA disclosures and not having information about how our information has been collected online.
Yep.
You have an incomplete story.
Indeed. Just quickly before I let you go, I want to pick your brains on this. And this is the Trans-Pacific Partnership intellectual property chapter that kind of was revealed last week. WikiLeaks up to its old tricks. One thing that was very interesting in it, though, was the idea of internet television and what the IP that would attach to that would be. And there was one particular passage that said, no party may permit the retransmission of television signals on the internet without the authorisation of the right holder or right holders of the content of the signal. If that were to go through and Australia were to agree to that, what does that mean we can't watch?
What this is fundamentally about is licensing. So right now there are a number of different technologies that exist that operate to try and democratize terrestrial TV by legally streaming it across the internet. Apps like Aero, for example, fit into this particular category, also Roku, where they're using legal loopholes for saying, all right, let's say, you know, a 90s TV show that's been cancelled in Australia, not available legally for sale, but also not being broadcast by any of the terrestrial or cable television stations. They want to allow people to subscribe to their service in order to get access to the shows that they want to watch.
Right.
The convenient aspect about apps like Aero and Roku is that it doesn't require them to engage with content holders.
Indeed.
The law right now says, well, it is technically possible to do this, and there isn't any legislation necessarily preventing that from existing on the internet. So particularly in the US, the FCC has had to retroactively and proactively create new legislation to address this new technology, which up until recently is technically legal. So they want content owners to be able to charge companies like Roku and Aero a large, you know, not insurmountable fee in order to engage with them and to provide this content to users, because they believe that companies like Aero and Roku are profiting from it and that they are therefore equal and deserve a cut of that profit.
You're right. Okay.
You know, it's an interesting and complex situation, which I think it needs ongoing discussion about what rights content holders have, and can you turn back the clock on technology?
Indeed. And we'll see what comes of it ultimately and what more WikiLeaks has to tell us about how those negotiations are going. Claire, I appreciate your time as always. Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you, Waleed.
Claire Porter, editor-at-large of techly.com.au, our correspondent for Histrionics. What am I saying? For Tech Tuesday, Histrionics is tomorrow and it'll be great. Trust me. 21 minutes to wait. Drawing room time. We might go back and have a look at Gough.